It's time for JT the Brick.
We're an NFL show. We've always been an NFL show. We are going to cover the NFL and the birth of a relocated franchise better than anybody. We're full-blown Raider Nation. We're going Raider Nation every day.
JT the Brick.
I got Mike Mayock and John Gruden ready to draft players on the defensive side of the ball. We got the 12th pick and the 19th pick in the NFL draft in the first round. We have a new stadium. We have a new facility out in Henderson. And we have all the Raider partners coming to Vegas to take this franchise to a much higher level globally because of Allegiant Stadium and what they're going to do on the field. I am in studio without a mask on, so we're ready to go.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT with you on a Thursday. Is that what it is? Is it Thursday? Could be a Monday, Sunday. I wouldn't know. Hope you're doing well, everybody. Thanks for listening, and thanks to PT's. The best happy hour in town, 5 to 8, midnight to 2. I don't take a breath. I still talk about it, even though it's shut down. The taverns will reopen, and we'll be there for them because they're there for us. Thanks to Golden Entertainment and everything they do for the show. Hope you're having a good day. We got a busy show lined up for you. I'm excited about the show today because it's going to go, as always, in a bunch of different directions. But for you UNLV fans, 30th anniversary, you're Running Rebel fans. I would love to hear from a few Running Rebel fans today. If you were here for the greatest moment in UNLV Running Rebels history, I'd like you to call the show and share a memory. I watched it on TV. I did not live here. If you lived here at the time, you were a season ticket holder, you went to games, you loved this team, you knew the players, the coaches, whoever it was, give us a call at 876-1340. How great of a time was it? I was here after that, and I was coming here around that time with my knucklehead buddies to visit, but I have no association with that. If you do, I want to hear some stories about the Running Rebels. Man, it should have been back-to-back, shouldn't it have? When you think of how great that team was, but the epic beatdown of the Dukies, the trouncing, and the ultimate score, and the biggest blowout, and the most dominant performance in the history of the tournament, something that gives this city name recognition. If you're a Rebels fan, be all over it, 876-1340. And have you seen a better team since? Because there's been great teams before UNLV. Alcindor, Walton. You look at the greatest teams ever assembled, but that UNLV team was special. It was super unique. And if you look at since then, since the national championship, and what happened 30 years ago, what teams off the top of your head can you name that were better than that? Or on the Mount Rushmore? But the key to that is it's got to be UNLV post-UNLV. Because UNLV could have hung with any team at any time because of their athleticism and their legendary coach. But you don't put them, or maybe you do, with UCLA with Wooden. Bobby Knight's undefeated team. If you look at the greatest teams of all time, do you have UNLV in the top five? Where do you have that legendary Rebels team? Hey, there's a lot of social media on it today. And I know there's some fans that are listening that would like to jump in on that. As you can hear from my voice from doing this show all week, two of them. Love to hear from you at 876-1340. All right, let's move on to Adam Schefter. I think this is a big story that no one's really talking about. Schefter clearly is not comfortable with what the NFL's doing. Nor am I, because I don't know if it's right or wrong. I am one of the guys, I don't sit on a fence. I knock down fences. So if you sit on the fence, you could say, well, yeah, the NFL's going forward with the draft. I don't know if I like it, blah, blah, blah. That's sitting on the fence. Adam Schefter's got one of the biggest jobs out there. He works for ESPN. He breaks news. He's a partner. And he can tell that with the chaos of the virus, maybe this draft talk and all this NFL free agency is a bit too much.
And we all hope that it happens, frankly. We all want that back. We all want to see the days where we have that distraction of football. But OTAs, that's no not shot. Happening. Yeah. The offseason program, that's not happening. The draft is happening only through the sheer force and determination and lack of foresight from Phil, frankly. I mean, they are determined to put this on. Well, there is carnage in the streets.
Wow. He called out the NFL for lack of foresight while there's carnage in the streets. That's Adam Schefter, who does this, and he's pretty good at what he does. So that's one of the things now that I think a lot of people are having a tough time coming to grips with. How often can we talk about sports on sports radio? I think all the time, right? We're even mixing in Tiger King. We're mixing in Ozarks. We're coming up with list and poll questions like never before, which is fine. You got to adjust accordingly. We'll get back to a point, I hope, in June, July, August, where I got so much sports coming at me, I don't have enough time to talk about it. There's so much sports, NBA, NHL, NFL, college football, that it's all just flying at us. And we're able to talk about boxing and MMA. It's going to feel good, but we can't say that right now. So also in the monologue, I wanted to point out to you, I wanted to know from you if you think that we've gone too far. Not me in this show, but do you think that the NFL and football has gone too far with the glorification of money and all the billions of dollars, billions with a B, that have been secured for contracts, television deals, the extension of television deals, and all the talk about free agency heading into the draft? Is it too much? Is it just right? Is it unnecessary? Love to hear from you, 876-1340, if you're out there on the NFL and what's happening with the optics of it. I'm really into that word now, optics. Same with me on Twitter. My wife reminds me, tomorrow's my wife's birthday. It's a big birthday. And I'm going to spend the day tomorrow night with my wife. And we were going to celebrate this unbelievable night I had lined up for her. We'll have that unbelievable night at home with my dog and my sons. And we'll celebrate. But it's not going to be the same of what it could be. And my wife reminds me of my optics from time to time. That tweet really necessary? You really got to tell everybody who you're having on every 10 minutes? You really got to retweet that or this or that? Because she knows, like I don't know all the time, that this is a time to be more humble. This is a time to be lucky for your health. This is a time to help out other people who definitely need their help. It's not about your thumbs moving around the clock. Hasn't it been great, not good, to not hear a peep from the Kardashians? Hasn't it been unbelievable, praise the Lord, that you don't have to hear from them and their relevancy is not on your radar anymore? But this is my business, sports. And we got an NFL team moving to town. And I've said that, and I'm a leader in that controversy, which is sports going forward. What do we talk about? Well, I'll tell you one thing I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Raiders. The Raiders deserve to have the red carpet rolled out the way they thought they were going to get it. And they're clearly not going to get it because of the virus. The Golden Knights were on a run, I believe, to make a run to the cup. Again, they're not getting the rollout that's expected. But they're aware of that. Both the Raiders and Golden Knights know that the doctors and nurses and emergency workers are much more important than what they're doing and what they're doing day to day. So it's difficult now. It's not difficult with me coming up with topics. It's just a little bit difficult trying to check your ego at the door on sports radio, trying to figure out what to talk about and how to tie it in with these numbers that are so alarming when it comes to the virus. And I'm trying to come up with some positive stories, and one today, which is about as positive as it can get. The New England Patriots sent their team plane to China and have come back to Boston and did a great job bringing back medical masks, the N95 masks that came in. They were able to do that. It was 1.2 million N95 masks, and they're here. And it's great. And it's an unbelievable story. As it came out of the Shenzhen airport, the international airport, all the boxes were loaded. There's a lot of video of it. You can find it on social media. The plane was permitted to be on the ground in China for a maximum of 3 hours. People familiar with the matter said that the crew was required to stay on the plane while a ground crew loaded the cargo. It took 2 hours and 57 minutes. They beat it by 3 minutes. And they were able to take off and come back to Boston Logan International Airport. This is an incredible story. And I think the Kraft family deserves a lot of credit. Jonathan Kraft, the president, Robert Kraft, the owner, as they did something positive with their net worth, with their plane, and they were proactive and said, we're going to try to help the world, and we're going to try to help these nurses and doctors with these masks. I thought that was fantastic today. So hopefully we have more positive stories like that, and we can get into that, because I'm excited. Gil Brandt's going to join us momentarily, the Hall of Fame NFL insider. Looking forward to talking to him. Derek Jeter decided to rent, Tom Brady decided to rent Derek Jeter's mansion in Tampa. Quick story. 4 or 5 years ago, I saw that mansion from the water. I was down in St. Pete. We were down there doing a radio remote. Buddy of mine had a boat. I said, take me to St. Jetersburg. That's the nickname of the property. He said, yeah, it'll take about 30 minutes from where our boat is over here to there. I go, no problem. Bought a 12-pack of beer. We got on the boat, threw a couple of beers back, and I remember turning the corner of the dock and seeing the most magical home I've ever seen. And I grew up in New York. I've been to the Hamptons. I lived in L.A. I've been to some pretty nice houses. Look at the homes here in Southern Highlands and in the Ridges in Summerlin. Been privy to go to a few of those. Nothing like this. Jeter had the biggest and boldest house I've ever seen. Again, the name is St. Jetersburg. Tom Brady's moving in. Isn't that incredible? I mean, how was your day? How'd you like to be on that phone call? Brady calling Jeter. Jeter saying, yeah, no problem. What's the rent? I don't know, $30,000 a month? I don't know, how about $25,000? Oh, we're good. Cut the check and do that. And boom. Tom Brady and Giselle running around in Jeter's backyard getting on the boat. That was a cool story to read about today. Yesterday, some good feedback from our Tom Flores interview. Coach Flores came on. We were able to talk to him. And I got pretty emotional at the end of it because, again, it's about him not being in the Hall of Fame. And someone reminded me, one of our great listeners, forget about it. His life has been beautiful. It will remain beautiful even if he doesn't get in. He shouldn't be defined, Tom Flores, by getting into the Hall of Fame or not. That's the mistake of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That is not the mistake of Tom Flores. So I wanted to thank the Raiders, who will give us Steve Wisniewski next week. Their legendary offensive lineman, one of the toughest guys I know. We'll talk to Wiz next week, and the Raider content will continue to pick up around the corner. Also, Dave Gocher will join us at the top of the hour from the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll have Darren Millard on tomorrow. Recently, we had the owner, Bill Foley, on. We had Riley Smith. We were thrilled to have Alec Martinez come on the show. And the other day, Alex Tuck. That's a great relationship with our proud partner, the Vegas Golden Knight. All right, our first guest, Gil Brandt, is one of the great all-time legends in NFL history, recently inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he joins us courtesy of SiriusXM NFL Channel. Gil, how are you and the family? How's everybody holding up?
Everybody is holding up, but it's like I know now how these people that are in jail feel, because when you're trying to carry out the rules to help this thing get stopped and get us better in a hurry, it's hard being caged up, so to speak, in your house. So what you have to do is try to take advantage of calling as many friends as you can and just to see how they're doing. But otherwise, I'm doing fine.
You know, your region of the country, too, compared to New York, I'm a New Yorker. I live in Vegas. I'm watching a lot of the New York news where the numbers have spiked and they're very high, which really concerns a lot of people. What about your area and what everybody's doing to do the right thing in social distance?
Well, I think that the majority of the people realize that, you know, this is kind of like a football game. We have a game plan that was put together by a coaching staff, the medical people, and if we follow that game plan, that's been put together by this coaching staff, medical people, I think we have a chance to nip this thing and get back to normal a lot quicker than otherwise you would.
Gil, this is so unique, and it's very unfortunate, but going back to 9/11 and the assassination of President Kennedy and the NFL making decisions about stopping or going forward, what have you been frequently asked about the league going forward with free agency in the upcoming draft?
Well, you know, I think that one of the reasons that free agency went forward is because I think the union, the NFLPA, wanted it to happen. I think that we, in the first week of free agency, there were $2.6 billion worth of contracts executed, of which 50-plus percent, 54% I think it was guaranteed money. So I think that happened because of the pressure on the NFLPA to get this thing going, because all these guys knew they were going to get a lot of money, and rather than wait for it and hope that it got there in the next month or two, you know, they say the bird in the hand is worth worth two in the bush. So I think that accelerated it. I'm not quite sure why there's a groundswell against calling the draft off for 3 weeks. And the reason I say that is because I think that the sooner we can know who's going where, and we can get those people a semblance of a playbook, we can get them a semblance of a workout program, that we can get these guys in ready to come to camp a lot better than if for 3 weeks with everybody's kind of in limbo, is what it is, working out in your garage and so forth, as some of them are. And so if we can get this so that when I do come to camp, or I'm able to come to camp, we'll at least have understanding of how we call our formations, you know, just the nomenclature of what would go on. And then, of course, as I said, I think that it gives players an incentive. I've been drafted by the Dallas Cowboys or the New England Patriots or whoever it may be. I think a guy has a little bit more of a desire to work out and be ready to be with his team once he's allowed to come there.
Gil Brand, SiriusXM NFL Radio. And Gil, as an innovator, a Hall of Famer when it came to scouting and the draft and your background, are you interested? I'm sure you're very interested, but fascinated on the difference between some teams and how they're going to navigate through their scouting, their communications, and get ready here in the next 3 weeks.
Well, you know, that's kind of like everything. It's kind of like ice cream. Some like chocolate ice cream, and some like vanilla, and some like strawberry, and everybody has their own liking or disliking about how they want to accomplish something. I would imagine that probably 40% of them are going to do it the same way. You know, the other 60% of the 32 are going to do it in a different way. As an example, I was yesterday shocked, so to speak, when I read that the New Orleans Saints were going to be having their war room at a brewery in New Orleans. You know, I myself would be worried about being sure that I had enough speed dial lines in my office, and so I could get the information I needed as quickly as possible. But New Orleans has been pretty successful in the past, and that may be a good idea. I'm not sure, you know, it's trial and error. I'm not sure any of us know what the right way is and what the wrong way is.
Gil, take us back to the days in the 60s with Tex Schramm and Coach Landry, when you were preparing and you were a week out for the draft and you knew you had an advantage from your skill set and all the research, when you were thinking about the potential of a trade or a certain player that you weren't sure was going to be there when you were picking, and those memories that you had thinking ahead a week or two out before the draft?
Well, you know, we tried to do this. We tried to call, at that time there was 12 and 14 teams. We were the 13th. And what you tried to do is call all 13 teams. You obviously don't call yourself and say, look, at, do you have any thoughts about moving your second, about trading your second? Do you have anything of need? And it was pretty hard early because we didn't have very good players. But after about in the mid-60s, we started to have a lot of pretty good players, and we were able to trade some guys. A wide receiver named Duke Ferguson, as an example, came to mind, that we traded to Seattle in a part of a deal that produced a second-round pick for us. So you tried to lay the groundwork ahead of time. It's like scheduling your itinerary. You try to lay the groundwork ahead of time, and that's not always going to work out that way. But the better prepared you are, and our board was done a week ahead of time. And we would have about 2 weeks before the draft, we would have what we call the final. And then a week before the draft, we'd have what we would did the final. And we drafted right down the line on that board with one exception. One year, we were supposed to draft Joe Montana, and we passed him because we had three veteran quarterbacks, and we took a guy named Doug Crosby instead. But we tried to put in what we called plateaus also and say that, you know, the three players or four players, these guys all look alike. So if we need a defensive lineman and maybe that defensive lineman is fourth or fifth in that particular plateau, we would feel comfortable drafting him, jumping ahead of somebody to draft him. But only if they were in the same plateau. We would go after a defensive lineman that was our 45th ranked player if we had a chance to get our 12th ranked player.
Hall of Famer Gil Brandt joins us. Gil, with their owners or GMs, you could take us back to the early years where you really enjoyed those conversations and knew they were going to be more complex than others?
Oh, yeah. There was, you know, it was it was kind of interesting. Russ Thomas, who did a good job for the Detroit Lions, when you made a call to Russ Thomas, it was like a life history call, is what it was. He never stopped talking, and then you had other people that said, "Look, just tell me what you're thinking about, and we'll get on from there." So, you know, some people just have more patience than others. And sometimes it's good to have that patience, and other times it's good to make a quick decision.
Wrapping it up with Gil Brandt. Gil, any new comments on Dak Prescott and just the idea of him accepting a deal, holding out for a better deal, and what the Joneses are thinking now, considering a lot of free agency has come and gone? He got the franchise tag, but everybody's debating what his actual worth is. I think it's a really hard number to pin down.
Well, you know, it is, and you know, they want to be paid more than Wilson. Mm-hmm. And if memory serves me correctly, Wilson's been to two Super Bowls, won one, and lost one at the end. Is what took place. I think sometimes, and I used to tell players this. I said, you know, the agent is involved in this in the third party, and the agent doesn't want to be sold short. He doesn't want to have it used against him that Dak Prescott got $1 million less than Wilson. But what the people don't recognize and realize that $1 million less in a state that doesn't have any income tax and the cost of living is very low is very good. So if you probably put a number, a figure to it, I think that this is just as good as anybody's. Including the new one that Brady just signed, right, which is for only $25 million a year after winning six Super Bowls. You know, it all comes down to dollars and cents and wanting to be able to brag that I got the best deal. But I think somewhere in there, the player has to step up and say, you know what, I want this deal. I know I'm leaving some money on the table. Hometown discount, whatever you want to call it. But sometimes you just have to take the bull by the horns, as I say, and make the deal. And I hope that's what Dak does.
You know, Gil, lastly on that, it's amazing you said that, because with Roger and the other quarterbacks that you worked with and knew, the amount of money and net worth they built on endorsement deals and real estate companies, and you mentioned no state taxes and the cost of living. How about some of the branding, what Romo's doing now with media, and the amount of money that a quarterback could make with the star on his helmet 20 or 30 years down the road, like your good friend Troy Aikman?
Well, let me say this to you, that in Dak's case, providing he is in Dallas, he has about $10 million worth of endorsements booked for the next 2 years.
Mm. Wow. Hey, I love your mailbag. I'll leave it on that. I went through it before I knew you were coming on. Leave us with that. How much fun you're having interacting not only on the radio, but on social media here when you throw out draft questions and you get this type of response.
Oh, I'm having a lot of fun with it. And you know, it's a lot of people are draft nicks or whatever they want to call them. It's different when you've been there and done it as a person, as opposed to somebody that's trying to import to do it like it should be done, supposedly.
You're the best, Gil. Thanks for doing this. Stay safe. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Okay, JT. Thank you.
Thank you, Gil. Gil Brand, the Hall of Famer. Got into the Hall of Fame last year in their last class. It doesn't look like they'll have an induction class this year. The Hall of Fame has been decided on, but they're going to have to wait to have the ceremony unless vast things change here pretty quickly. That's a big interview. Getting Gil on today, excited about that. Don't get him on the radio much. Way to go. Thanks to Gil Brand. Hopefully we can do that again. Tom Flores and Gil Brand, two guys in their 80s that can talk football better than anybody. And Gil's older than Coach Flores. A former UCLA standout and head coach, Rick Neuheisel, will join us coming up. We'll check in with Coach Neuheisel coming up next.
It's very impressive. We brought several in back-to-back-to-back the other day just to compare them. There's some real playmakers, big guys, quick, thick, fast twitch guys. There's a variety of receivers, and there's some guys that can return the football as well. So yes, it's a strong part of this draft. I think it's as strong a wide receiver class as there's been in a while.
Turn it up, Bobby. I'm excited to be here. Weekend is around the corner. JT with you. Henderson Hyundai, the superstore, Boulder Highway in Henderson. Proud partner of the Vegas Golden Knights and Lotus Broadcasting. We appreciate their support during this really difficult time as I'm looking for positive stories. I'm looking for the good stories here. Tony Boselli really was in a tough spot with the virus. The legendary Tony Boselli of the Jacksonville Jaguars. I believe a future Hall of Famer. He's that good. The left tackle, he spent 5 days in the Mayo Clinic where he fought the virus. About half of his stay was in the ICU, and he was able to survive it. He was having trouble breathing. You hear about this today. When I got up, the first thing I did is I turned on the news to watch the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, speak, and he had his brother, Chris Cuomo, from CNN on, and he put him up on a live screen, and they talked back and forth. It was riveting television. Had nothing to do with politics. I think I blocked a guy today. I put it up, and some guy comes at me and says, why are you doing this? Why am I doing this? It was a beautiful thing to see two brothers talking, one who has the virus, who's trying to get over the virus, and helping other people. That's why I'm talking about Tony Boselli. So I thought that was a good story. And he was in deep trouble. He was in deep trouble. He said about half of his stay was in the ICU. And he said it was shortly after he arrived that he discovered he was in deep, deep trouble. Quote, I was kind of fuzzy, but I remember the doctor saying, if we don't get you oxygen and stabilize you, we're going to have to take you to the next level. I remember laying there thinking, what do you mean if it doesn't work? He says, we don't know what direction this is going. And that's one of the most big, strong, fit athletes you can imagine. This virus is no joke. All right, I'm excited to talk to our next guest, the former Rose Bowl MVP from UCLA. He was a coach there. He's worked on multiple NFL staffs throughout his career. Plays a mean guitar. Rick Neuheisel, kind enough to join us. Good to hear from you, Coach. How you been?
You know, I've been pretty darn good. I count my blessings, given the state of things in our country and in our world. And I just send out my very best to all those impacted and tell them, hang in there. We can get through this. So hopefully sending out as many positive vibes as we can, my friend.
Well, that's great because it's important. You're a leader. A lot of people are looking to you for your observations. Before we get into football, I got to get into music and your guitar and singing because I am all in on Garth Brooks now, Coach. I watched the special on CBS. I watched the Library of Congress, and I see what he can do as he's interacting from home with his wife. It is brilliant that this musician is helping people who are stuck at home.
Garth is one of the all-time great people, and he's incredibly brilliant, and obviously, as you noticed last night, incredibly talented. And obviously, collaborating with Trisha Yearwood makes it even that much more special. But in a time like this, there's nobody better than Garth Brooks because he can play his whole library of music, and Trisha's got her own library of music, but I'm at a concert one time, and his last song is American Pie by Don McLean, just he and a guitar out there, and I'm going, that guy's got some talent, and then some.
And, Coach, for you that likes to play and, you know, the covers, the American classics and the covers, you nailed it. He's got an unbelievable history as a songwriter, and then he can go into Seeger, into Billy Joel, James Taylor, everybody, and it sounds perfect.
He is, he's unique. I remember being at a place where he got a guitar and just jumped outside and said, let's play a little Night Move by Bob Seeger. And he knows every word to it. I mean, you're like pinching yourself that you're lucky enough to be there to watch.
Rick Neuhausel's our guest. And, Coach, one more on that. He's supposed to open up the stadium here in Vegas, where I am, Allegiant Stadium, where the Raiders will be playing. He's the first huge artist to open up the stadium. And you would think in August, hopefully, we'd be back, but we can't look at timelines that way. And I'm sure you have a lot of music and shows lined up with your family throughout the summer that is going to be questionable now.
Well, yeah, and listen, like you said, there's so much uncertainty. We just take it a day at a time. But I think it's okay to remain positive that the smartest people in the world, the people that grew up studying this kind of stuff, are on 24-hour watch trying to fix this and trying to get an answer. And if there's a silver lining, you walk around, and I know we're supposed to keep our distance, and I think most of the folks are doing so. But even from 6 to 8 feet away, you see a lot of smiles, you see a lot of waves, and it's a team universe. And when was the last time any of us could say that? So I think the positivity that's coming out of We Are the World, no pun intended from the song, but I think the positivity coming out of that allows us to be positive about the future.
Rick Neuhausel joins us. Coach, what were your first memories of the NFL draft, either coming out of the Rose Bowl as the MVP, but as a college coach, your involvement in the NFL? Give us a couple of stories that you go back to that you really recall when it came to the draft and certain players and the process.
Well, you know, listen, I'm a football fan and been a football fan ever since I could walk. I remember wearing a Bart Starr jersey the first time I could put something on and remember wearing it. But I guess my best story and the one that comes to mind is when I was coaching Troy Aikman at UCLA. We were playing in the Cotton Bowl against Arkansas, and Dallas had the number one pick. And I thought, walking around with this kid from Henrietta, Oklahoma, I was walking around with Elvis Presley. I mean, the media was everywhere. Because it was seemingly a foregone conclusion that Aikman would be the pick. And here he is in Dallas showcasing his wares, and it was a scene. It was a scene like none other. As you know, everything's bigger in Texas, and that was certainly the case in following Troy Aikman and what he got done for the UCLA Bruins that year. As it came to pass, he was the number one pick, and obviously it was a prudent choice because he ends up a Hall of Famer.
Coach, is there a comparison to Joe Burrow because of the transfer like Troy to get to UCLA and Burrow moving, and then he has the greatest year ever? And, I mean, you were a great quarterback in college, and a lot of college quarterbacks thought they put up numbers. And then you see what Burrow does, worthy of the number one pick, and he had a transfer out of Ohio.
Yeah, listen, Joe Burrow is a unique player. I think, you know, both those kids, Troy Aikman back when leaving UCLA and Joe Burrow now leaving LSU, both were consummate professionals without ever having played professional football. And what I mean by that is they loved studying the game. They weren't into going out and being you know, the glamour guy on campus and taking advantage of their celebrity. They were into doing the homework, doing the what was necessary to know everything there was to know about the opponent defense that particular week, what protections would work, what routes combinations, where the advantages lie with his personnel against their personnel. And they were just ready for the next level. They really were used to the grind of preparation because they enjoyed the grind of preparation. I think Burrow will have a great career. The question will be whether or not Cincinnati has enough around him. I know they franchised A.J. Green, which will be a great start. But as they add pieces to Troy's situation in Dallas, you saw it all come to fruition.
Rick Neuhausel is our guest. Great to have him on. And, Coach, has your process changed over your career as you break down quarterback tape when you look at it? And is there something that's evolved over the last 10 or 20 years when you take a player that you didn't coach and you look at the film, like a Tua or a Burrow or Jordan Love, and what you're looking for?
Well, I think the athleticism is much more important. The rules have started to sway a little bit towards the world of the RPO. And when the quarterback's legs can get involved, you can dictate what coverages you're going to see. You're going to mandate eight-man boxes. And with eight-man boxes, you're only going to get a couple of different coverages. There's just only so much you can do when you're playing three deep, whether it's man or some zone. The spaces are bigger because you can't play as many underneath and still have a four-man pass rush. So I think a great athlete at quarterback is a great place to start. It's not mandated, but I think if you have your choice and have your druthers, you want somebody that can move with his legs. And if you think about Joe Burrow, I think that was one of his most underrated skills, was his ability to run the ball. That right at the end of the first half against Clemson in the national championship game, he has a 21-yard run there that ends up getting him into the end zone, making the score 28-17, and the rest, as they say, was history.
Rick Neuhausel, as we wrap it up, Coach, any comment on Tua with the injuries? There's been a few of them and significant ones, and the video he's putting out and everything he says he's 100%, but you remember Bo Jackson, you remember other injuries before when it came to a hip injury, saying it and seeing it are two different things.
Well, I think at the quarterback position, you're probably a little bit more comfortable with the injury situation than you would have been with a running back or a wide receiver or something like that. You're not going to ask one of the franchise to be vulnerable as much as you may at those other positions. But it's interesting to me, you know, Tua Tagovailoa is a six-footer. We're not even talking about that he's 6 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson, Drew Brees have all got that beyond. We aren't concerned that he's not Battlestar Galactica in terms of his height. What he has is charisma. And what we realize in this world of entertainment merged with athleticism, that you need charisma, and this guy exudes it, and that's why he's going to be a glamour guy for somebody. I think we all hope and pray that he stays healthy and can play, you know, double digits as a career, because it has been a blast to watch him in Tuscaloosa. And I think whoever gets him, whether it be Miami, the Chargers, whoever may trade up for those spots, they're going to be thrilled to death that Tua Tagovailoa is on their team.
Coach, leave us with something that you've been consuming on Netflix or movies, or what have you watched recently since we've all been inside that you'd like to share with everyone?
Okay, a couple of things now. Peaky Blinders on Netflix. Early 1900s in a portion of England. It's like a family of people that are trying to run through. They become kind of like their own organized crime syndicate, taking on different factions coming from other places. That's fascinating stuff. And then Band of Brothers, the Spielberg-Tom Hanks collaboration about World War II, Easy Company, and going through D-Day and the liberation of Germany is a fascinating, fascinating 10-part series. If you're looking for some things to watch that you haven't maybe seen, that's on HBO. So those are my two recommendations right now, and I'm having a blast watching both.
Hey, Coach, real quick on Band of Brothers. Not only did I love it, I couldn't turn it off. I loved it so much. And my wife and I, a year ago, went to Paris, and we took an overnight trip to Normandy. And we did the tour on the beach of Normandy. It was Omaha Beach. It was incredible. And then we stayed at the hotel where Hanks and Spielberg were sitting every night going over their show notes. We stayed in that same hotel where their pictures were on the wall. That was a life-changing miniseries. I'm happy you're locking in with that. It's incredible.
That's awesome. You know what? Had it been a different time, you would have been an Easy Company. You would have been behind enemy lines, and we could have counted on you like we're counting on those guys.
Well,
I'm loving every episode.
Well, when I hang out with your old teammates, Jim McCullough and Matt Stevens, and we have a cold one, when this is all done on the beaches of Kauai, we'll give you a call, and we'll get through this, Coach. Thanks for doing this.
I appreciate it, my friend. And listen, everybody stay safe. It's going to be football season before long.
You too, Coach. Stay safe. Rick Neuheisel right here. Excited to talk to him. What a career he's had. He really has had a nice career. From the highest moment of being the MVP of the Rose Bowl to going on to coaching at every level there, and really good on the radio. And I'm happy he said that. That was nice. Band of Brothers. Wow, I love that show. That was done so well by Spielberg and Hanks and executive producing that. And it had a big effect on me when I went to Normandy. And my wife and I went. It was incredible. That's a trip. That was a bucket list trip. We were lucky enough to go to Paris. And we were in Paris and we saw Notre Dame before it burned. So we were there to see it in its full glory. And the weather was great. And we stayed right around Notre Dame in Paris. And we were there for a couple of days. And my wife put this trip together for us, and we were going to go. Everybody from Paris who goes to Normandy, they go for the day. And we said, no, we can't go for the day. We don't want to be rushed. So we took one of those trains, those fast trains. And I think it was about an hour, 90 minutes. And we got to Normandy and got picked up, and we went on a tour. And it was probably one of the most locked-in moments of my life to pay attention. You know, there are times you pay attention in life. There are other times you're not paying that close attention. I was paying attention there, and to walk on the cliffs and to walk the beaches and to walk the beaches of Normandy. And then everybody else rushes to the train to go back to Paris. One train and you go back. And we said, no, we're going to spend the night here. And we happened to stay at Le Lion, this hotel where Spielberg stayed in. And it's a small, small hotel. And in the lobby is this bar with leather couches, probably seats about 20 people. The bar probably seats about four stools. And we sat in these chairs where Ike, Eisenhower, all the legends, you know, the Prince of Wales, Princess Diane, they had all their pictures, John Wayne. Everybody has been to this hotel. And the person who owns the hotel, and they served us, and we sat there. And if the walls could talk, it was incredible. And the reason I wanted to go so bad, as Coach Neuheisel said, Band of Brothers. And watching that and then being fascinated and studying up on World War II and the invasion of Normandy. And that was a moment that I'll never forget. And I hope we can all go back and put together a bucket list trip and go on that bucket list. He also mentioned Pinky Blinders. Ashley of Sam and Ash told us that the other day. Our personal injury attorneys, if you get in a car accident, especially now, they're working. They'll take your call. SamandAsh.com, 702-820-1234. See, that's how I promote our partners. Coach Neuheisel said Pinky Blinders, and Ashley of Sam and Ash told me to watch that show. So those are two recommendations. I'm going to dive in. SamandAsh.com. Dave Gosher on deck. Stick around for that.
There's little to none as far as soreness. I think a lot of that was in the front end of rehab. Going throughout this process, being able to run, throw, I haven't felt sore or things like that. So it's been good.
Tua Tagovailoa. Say it with me. You got to say the tongue. Tagovailoa. Tua. So I think Tua's doing a great job. He's telling everybody. He's literally telling everybody that he's okay. And that's what you should do when you're coming off an injury. When you're the guy coming off the injury, the athlete, the male or female, and you're ready to go, tell everybody you're ready to go. No one else has the business to know if you're at 90, 92%, 80%. He's trying to secure a contract. Tua's trying to make money going forward. So he has to do the right thing. He also talked about his body and how he rates it on a scale of 1 to 10. For Tua, I think this is important to own the narrative to tell everybody that he's worthy of that top pick.
Let's go scale of 1 to 10, 10 feeling the best you've ever felt. How would you rate your body right now?
I'd say I'm 100% right now. I'm just ready to go out and play.
So that's a lie. So he's not at 100%. He can't be. But mentally, he can trick himself into saying that because he knows he's going to make money. Why would he say anything else? Right? What else is he going to say? We know that he's a quarterback that could go number one if it wasn't for Joe Burrow. And number two, why not number two? Well, the Redskins aren't going to take a quarterback. Maybe they will. Speaking of that, the Redskins at number two, Joe Theismann went on the record. Joe comes on with me often, And he's very outspoken on this. So the Redskins, do they take Tua? Do they go with Chase Young, the best defender?
Without hesitation, I take Chase Young for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think he's the best player in the draft. And there's an old adage when it comes to taking the best player in the draft. You know, he's not a generational quarterback. Burrows might be, okay? I think so, but Tua is not. I'm not sold on the strength of his arm.
All right, so that's Joe Theismann, pretty strong on those opinions there. Really strong. So that's why the draft is so important. If you need a quarterback, you got to go get the quarterback. That's the one thing I've learned being around the Raiders and talking to some football people over my career. Whoever you want, go get. Don't wait for that player. If you're going to trade up, you got the ability. It would hurt a draft. It would hurt a draft down the road if you go there and wait for someone. But if you want Tua Tagovailoa and you think he's worthy of the number two pick and you got the number five pick like the Dolphins, you have got to make a decision to trade up and go get him. Now, if you don't want him and you're looking at it saying, look, I'll take Justin Herbert or Jordan Love at number five and I'm going to keep my other draft picks, then you just stay there. The issue becomes if you love the player, you got to go get him. And Belichick's the opposite. Belichick just does his homework, waits, sits there for the best player to come. And then when it gets to his selection, which is normally at the end of the first round, it could be the 24th pick, the 28th pick, they got a board. And if there's three or four players, they vote on the one they want and they're good. And they win Super Bowls. Well, they did because they had Tom Brady. Now they don't have Tom Brady. Will they possibly move up to go get the quarterback? Because I still don't believe Bill Belichick wants to waste a year of his coaching life. He's not getting any younger. The year that Tom Brady left and go with Jarrett Stidham as his quarterback. That's a prideful thing. And Bobby, you're a Patriot fan. And that takes a lot. There's pride in their stupidity, Bobby. And if Belichick goes, look, I've won six, I've been to nine, and he's won eight. Two with the Giants, six with the Patriots. If he goes, I'm going to take a year off as Tom Brady's playing down in Tampa to wait for Trevor Lawrence, I think Belichick's going to go all in to win more than ever.
Of course. He has to prove he can win without Tom Brady. The same as Brady has to be able to prove he can win without Belichick.
But you can't win without Tom Brady if you go with Stidham as your quarterback. You're not going to beat anybody. You're going to maybe go out and get someone like Cam Newton.
And they had a season once where Brady was injured and they went 11-5.
Yes.
Stick around.
That's a good point. Matt Castle. Matt Castle can do it, and Matt Castle made a lot of money with that. But this is a quarterback draft. It is, ladies and gentlemen. It's not a cornerback draft. This is a quarterback draft. If you want a quarterback, this is the year. Now, next year, it'll be Justin Fields from Ohio State, and it'll be Trevor Lawrence. But they're going to go to the worst teams out there. That'll probably be Jacksonville or a couple other teams at the bottom of the barrel. Bill Belichick's not getting Trevor Lawrence next year. And I still can't believe some people think that Belichick should tank or lose on purpose. I almost drove off the road when I heard that. Coming up next, we'll talk to a couple of good guests lined up. Dave Gosher will join us, the TV voice. And Tom Looney, my longtime Happy Chatter companion. You don't want to miss that. Looney coming up next hour. Stick around on the Las Vegas Sports Network.